Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Now, back to America This Week, live with Father Matt Malone and Carrie Weber.
We are back. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. I'm Carrie Weber, along with Father Matt Malone and Father Eric Sundrup, and today we are talking with Eve Tushnet about her article in America, which you can find at americamagazine.org, Vows of Friendship. And Eve, one of the parts of this article describes the historical context for what were quite literally vows of friendship, which I think a lot of people might be surprised to hear about today. I mean, the most it seems like you would do today is get like a best friends forever necklace or some such thing. But these vows were really sort of serious vows that were widely recognized in the community in a historical context. Could you explain a little more about that?
Sure. Well, it varies really widely. And in some places you would find friendship as almost more of a purely practical arrangement where the heads of households would agree, we're going to share a home, we're going to share our finances. The phrase that was sometimes used was a common person, a common table. And then you'll find things that are really spiritually rich. In other practices, the one that really stood out to me was a description of two friends who would pledge to care for one another and one another's children in this life, and have masses said for whichever friend predeceased the other. They would make these promises on the steps of the church and then go inside and exchange the kiss of peace and receive the Eucharist together as a kind of seal of their friendship and their love for one another, to say that this was happening in front of God and in front of the church community.
So, Eve, one of the things that comes up throughout the article, you're talking about, you know, people looking for forms that we kind of present only marriage or celibate religious life, and people are looking for something a little more. You use the example, I loved it, where you're talking about that Pixar film, the lonely volcano in the ocean, right? And as you know, it was watching all of the animals pair off, right? And the only option available is that this one he would pair off with, like, you know, another lonely volcano somewhere. I don't know what film that was originally in. But
it's Lava. It's the short right before Inside Out. So if you saw Inside Out, you probably saw it.
There you go. What do you think the needs are that people are expressing here, that they're looking for this? You know, there's got to be something in between or different than, you know, a vowed celibate life and religious life and marriage life. What are these human needs that people are expressing?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of them. One is really, people have often phrased it to me, and I think about this a lot, someone to come home to. That at the end of the day, when things have been difficult for you and you're tired and you really need some kind of sense of a home, you come home and there's a person who's home for you. That, I think, is a really basic human need. For some people, it's someone that they can sacrifice for, someone that they can give to and kind of pour out all the love that we have to give to others. And for some people, it's going to be physical intimacy. You know, we're mammals, right? Like, we need actual touch. This is a normal thing to need. And it can be very hard to get that in a society that, especially I think a lot of parts of American society, really interpret all touch as in some way romantic or sexual. And then I think for some people, and this I think is really normal, there's a deep-seated need for same-sex intimacy specifically. Regardless of your sexual orientation, right, lots of people have this deep longing for another woman or another man who can be in some way kind of like a partner to them. And one of the ways that historically people have gotten this is precisely through these deep and devoted friendships.
And that's real. I mean, we actually see it in throughout our culture. And
right, and we try to make up these new terms, like, oh, it's a bromance. Like,
right.
Have you considered that this is actually a
right.
friendship?
Right, right, exactly. I have a friend of mine, and she, you know, she and I are pretty good friends, but her best friend is a gay man, and she says, this is my gay husband. right? Like, and you know, because she's married to a man, and but there's like there's you're quite right. I mean, the culture is inventing terms to try to describe different kinds of relationships, right?
Right. When what you're saying is this is, you know, a really deep friendship.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I also think that an important point that you made in the piece is that that these alternative ways of living out commitment in friendship are actually help to strengthen marriage. You write in the piece that a society in which marriage is the only way for adults to pledge lasting love and care to one another is a society in which marriages themselves are weaker. I wonder if you could unpack that a little bit for our listeners.
Sure. I mean, that's coming from, you know, as time goes on, I see more of my friends get married, and I see the real differences between the friends who have other people that they can pour out their troubles to and the friends who only have their spouse. It's really hard when your spouse is the only person that you can really rely on for support and for kind of emotional grounding. And for honesty, the only person that you can have that kind of total honesty with. There are always going to be things that are almost secrets of the marriage, things that are specific to the marriage and don't ever get outside it. That's sort of the nature of marriage and family life. But there has to be, I feel like there really has to be, someone else you can lean on or other people, especially when the marriage itself is difficult. Someone that you can pour all that out to who isn't the other person that you're currently angry at. You need sort of somewhere to process. And you also just need someone who you know is going to be on your side. And there are this is in some ways why we have a wedding party, is to say these are the people who are pledging to support you and to support your marriage, your relationship to one another. They're kind of, these are the people who are going to be almost like the load-bearing pillars in building your household. And if you don't have that, obviously you can still have a strong, good marriage, but it is much harder. You just have less breathing room.
Right. And what a nice, I think a lot of people forget that aspect of the bridal party and think like, these are the people who will look nice next to me in photos and who will dress in matching clothes and sort of frame the marriage that way, but not as in like the actual relationships that follow the actual wedding day, which I think is the most important aspect of that. And one of the other really interesting things that you talk about in the article is the way in which these alternative forms of commitment and these real friendships that provide this support can be really helpful for people who are Catholic, who identify as gay or lesbian, and who want to live out the church's teaching on sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's how I got interested in this stuff in the first place. And it is fascinating to me how much creativity people have put into building a life for themselves that is not characterized by isolation, but characterized by self-giving love. It's interesting to me that in the article is a mix of people, straight, gay, whatever, you know, but it's interesting to me that some of the people who are gay are not, you wouldn't know it just from that article, which I like. I like that it's a way of thinking about human life that characterizes us by our vocations, our calling in life, and the people that we love. I do think that right now it can be really difficult to get guidance, spiritual guidance, if you're trying to live out the church teaching and you are, for whatever reason, not going to get married and don't have a religious vocation. Especially if you're gay, right? A lot of the spiritual guidance that you'll get from Orthodox priests is going to be very much focused on avoiding sin, which I guess might be fine, you know, maybe. But, you know, like that's one way of looking at life, but it is a lot, it's not sustainable unless it's within the context of how can I give myself in love.
Yeah, it can't just be about what we're saying no to. It has to be about who we're saying yes to.
Right.
It's a crucial part of, you know, in my work at parishes or as a priest and accompanying people, you have to affirm what's going on in their lives and the reality of, and the very human desire to give themselves in love. And how are we working with people in those situations and accompanying people? Because that's frequently the question that I'm asked pastorally, like, what am I meant to do, because you know it is yes. it is part of who I am to be in relationship, right? So how am I going to, you know, like, you can't just say you can't do this, you can't do that, and we need to talk about what is life-giving and how do you experience that life and love unfolding in your life.
Right. Yeah. Well, and also, and what is the meaning of your longing for love? Is it just through a pointless distraction? Or is this a gift that God is giving you that can actually connect you to other people that you can serve and give yourself to? Like, I believe church teaching. I accept all that. And it's in part because of that that it really disturbs me when priests will be really, or anyone really, will be really afraid of a gay person's longing for same-sex love instead of saying maybe this is a lamp that God is giving you to guide you to the people you are supposed to be loving.
Do you think that, I understand it's a complicated pastoral mm-hmm. reality, and this is going to require a great generalization, but how good generally do you think the church is at accompanying people in this way?
Oh, man. No, like, it super depends on where you are and right. what your specific situation is. Right. I've had really good luck, but I live in a really gay metropolis.
Right.
And I also, when I've come in for direction, I was all for spiritual guidance and everything. I was already in a place where I accepted church teaching and had certain specific spiritual problems that I needed to deal with. That's sort of an easier situation, I think, for a lot of priests.
Yeah.
But it really depends. I think the thing that you often have the hardest time, people have told me, finding guidance that won't look at their longings with suspicion, but will say, "How can we think creatively about how you can love?"
Right. Right. Exactly. And that helps the person who wants to. Live out the church's teaching, not see their longings as a threat, you know, but mm-hmm. as a gift, or as you say, as data that, you know, or
mm-hmm.
a
right.
light that's calling us to someone and to something greater.
Right.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, you know, any sex is a really powerful, crazy force. Any erotic longing can be a threat in that sense, but you have to be able to find some way of saying maybe some of what I'm drawn to in other people is good.
Right.
And maybe I can lean into that part.
Right, right. I imagine that because some of these vows of friendship and these ways of relating are new and are different, that they can be seen as sort of as threatening to what others might see as the norm. And I wonder what sort of criticism or challenges you've come up against in trying to live out these alternative ways of loving.
Yeah, well, there's sort of a wide range, right? Because on the one hand, people will say, well, this sounds like you want to just have your gay marriage and eat it too. Instead of saying, wait, maybe these are actually longstanding things, which you can find in scripture, of people of the same sex pledging to love and share their lives together, become part of one another's family. And there are other people from the other side who say, look, if it's good to, if as you're saying, there are forms of same-sex love that are good, why can't you go all the way? Why can't you do sort of normal coupled settling down like normal gay people do?
And what do you say? What do you say in response?
I mean, you know, it depends on where people are coming from. For me personally, you know, I don't pretend to understand what the church teaches, but I really trust her. I trust her as a guide in my life. And for me, it's very deeply connected to receiving Jesus in the Eucharist, that receiving him there means receiving the way of life that he is, the truth that he is. And just as we trust the church to give us Jesus in the Eucharist, I feel like you have to, on some level, trust the church to give you the way of life that's set out for you. So that's kind of that. In terms of, is this just a sort of an attempt to kind of sneak gay marriage into the church? It's part of our heritage. It is the traditional sexual ethic, is a world in which marriage is not the only form of love, and forms of same-sex love are honored and recognized. That's what, you know, all those people in the medieval church did.
Right.
Right. And you talk about a really interesting vowed friendship in the article between a couple who's married, a heterosexual couple, and a man who is single, who they have all together sort of vowed to be there for each other, vowed to this sort of friendship in a I suppose vow is too strong a word, but they had their friendship blessed, right? Mm-hmm. And that would be really, I think, unusual, but perhaps really comforting to everybody involved. I know as somebody who's, I guess, I don't know, am I still newly married? But like two, maybe going on 2 years now. And that having people who are outside of that as part of our community has been really, really helpful, as you mentioned.
Yeah, well, and that's actually a good example of some of the other practical, outside the theoretical questions, the practical challenges of adding more people to your family, especially in ways that employers and other entities won't necessarily recognize. Because one thing that that married couple and their friend are really upfront about is how challenging it's been to face the fact that due to their work, they may need to move.
Right.
Sort of, how do you negotiate that? Who do you take with you when you move? Is probably, I think, the question that makes devoted friendship hardest these days.
Right. Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. It you know, and the funny thing is that I was just recently having a conversation with our chief operating officer at America Media about our personal time, allowing people personal time, and what we were talking about was, people should be able to take time to care for the people who are really important mm-hmm. to them, whether they're married to them or they're their children or they're their parents. I mean, sometimes it's your neighbor who is alone mm-hmm. or sometimes it's your friend that, needs somebody to go to the doctor with them or whatever it is that, like, it's important that we not only, it's important that we allow people as employers and as a society to care for one another, and we support them in doing so.
Right.
So what I loved about this piece was the very point that you made about the Middle Ages. I love because you might be tempted to think that this is some kind of postmodern.
Right, something completely new came out of the summer.
Right, and no, it's actually pre-modern. Well, Eve Tushnet, thanks so much for being a contributing writer to America. Thanks for this piece, and thanks for being on the show today.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was fun.
Okay. That is really an amazing story, I think. I remember when she first pitched that and said, I really would like to write about this, and we kind of jumped on it.
Yeah, it's fascinating because I think as we become more mobile as a society, people sort of have friends all over the country, and your closest friends might not really be near where you are anymore, and it might be a decision between sort of a wide but sort of more shallow set of relationships or living close by your very immediate family. But so many of us live far from our immediate family now that these other forms of commitment and relationship and friendship are increasingly important.
I'm fascinated too in the discussion that Eve was bringing up and the other things, like the need that we have to ritualize or speak of this publicly or find, the joke was made about bromance, right? But like people use bromance to signify something. They want to point out that this matters. There's a sense we need to proclaim publicly what we're feeling and find ways to do that. And so,
yeah.
And, bromance isn't a new thing. It's a medieval thing. Imagine that, right? So, understanding the importance of that need to proclaim publicly what is going on in your life and have some way of ritualizing that.
Well, that's absolutely true. And rituals matter. And I remember my sister-in-law once telling me that she said, it's really important to stand up and make promises in front of other people. And I said, why is that? And she said, because I'm sure at some point in the next 40 years, I'm going to want to kill him and walk out the door. And I won't, because I actually stood up in front of some people and made some promises.
You've been shamed into staying.
At a baseline, but even more than that, it's also a part of giving an account of the joy that's within us, which is the most important thing that we can ever do as Christians.
And the people in, at a wedding per se, being present to witness that and saying, we're here to support you.
Well, you've been listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. To learn more about the topics we talked about today, check out America Magazine at americamagazine.org. You can also follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. And to subscribe to America Magazine, call 1-800-627-9533. That's 1-800-627-9533 for a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. for Carrie Weber and Father Eric Sundrup. I'm Matt Malone. Thank you and good day.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.